You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you've had a great week so far. Are you watching the new season of Real Housewives of Atlanta? If not, don't worry. They've only had one episode so far. And I'm telling you, I think this is the best of the most recent seasons. I feel like they've got a fantastic group of women. And more than ever, they feel really connected. So even when they're kind of ripping on each other, you get this feeling that they're actually friends off camera. And it's just a lighter feel to it. So returning for the season are Candy Burris, Kenya Moore, and Drew Sidora. Sheree Whitfield is back. She's hilarious. If you have not enjoyed Sheree Whitfield's comebacks, just take a YouTube tour. Look up some of her best moments. They are iconic moments. She's so funny on this show. So it's great to see her back. Marlo Hampton is so funny, and she's so interesting, so mysterious, if you will. And she is now a full-time cast member and so deserves it. So it's fun to see her in the mix and to see the story with her nephews, who she's now raising. And then there's a great new cast member. I'm really excited about her. Her name's Sonia Richards Ross. She's a mom. She runs a business and she's married to a former NFL player, Aaron Ross. And the best part is she's a four-time Olympic gold medalist in track and field. So I'm telling you guys, you've got to jump on and start watching. I really think this is going to be an outstanding season. And it's on every Sunday, by the way. All right. Then we move to Summer House. Guys, I'm a little bit worried about this. The wedding of Kyle and Amanda was beautiful. I thought having it at her parents' home was gorgeous. It was nice to see so many cast members there. But as a couple, I'm a little bit worried, and I don't think I'm alone. I have empathy for Kyle as I see the stresses of running a startup get to him. I totally get that. I got married to my husband when he was starting his business. Listen, starting a business is not for the faint of heart, trust me. And that's why I have concerns, because I know what it can do, the stress on a person and a marriage. And if you are not compassionate and have respect for one another in the beginning, it's only going to get harder. And I don't know if I see it between them. I just don't see it. And I think that's why I'm so worrisome. And I'm sure that there are a lot of you that feel the same way too. So I'm hoping they can work it out. But I mean, some of those brutal scenes in the, you know, the weeks before they got married, like also that poor florist. And Lindsay had the worst sunburn. I'm worried about that too. Now, they showed the clip from the upcoming reunion for Summer House, and none of the cast seems to like Carl or Lindsay, well, maybe the exception of Danielle. And I think that's pretty interesting, because I love to know what's happening off camera just as much as I want to know what's happening on camera. So we have that going on. A bummer that Carl and Craig were not used in some way, even as like a Zoom in phone call, because it seems like they had so much to do with this season. Still can't understand for the life of me why Sierra still pines for Austin. I just don't get it. And I think Alex brilliantly points that out in the reunion clip as well. So they also showed a clip for Winterhouse. And I remember I was delayed interviewing Craig by a few days because he was in the midst of filming Winterhouse. So that'll be fun to watch as well. But yeah, Summer House Wedding. I'm pulling for you, Kyle and Amanda, but I'm telling you, this is not for the faint of heart. This episode talks about an incredible doc series I think you're going to go crazy for. I know I did. It's on Apple TV Plus. It's called The Big Con. You guys, the lead character of this doc series is like a character from a Christopher Guest movie. And if that's not enough to make you stay, here's what happened. His name is Eric Kahn, which you can't even make. If you were to write a script, you'd make that name up. This is a real name. Eric C. Kahn, C-O-N-N. He's this big shot Kentucky lawyer, Eastern Kentucky. The kind of guy that is a billboard, you know, every 100 yards. Everybody in town knows him. He wears oversized suits, gigantic teeth, and a Lothario. Always has a new girlfriend, has been married more than 16 times. Running this office building where in the beginning he would purposely plant cars in the parking lot to make it look like he had more clients than he actually did. I think there were upwards of 30 women that worked for him. They were never allowed to talk to one another, which is already, you know, pretty concerning. And his mother would have a hovering presence in the office. She basically ran his finances and his life. He'd have to go to her to get coins to buy himself a soda, even though he was in his 50s. And also, no one was allowed to vacuum in the office because it triggered him, because when he was a child, his mom would vacuum when she was angry at him. There are so many wacky things about this guy. And he was running a gigantic con. So he was one of the biggest fraudsters in U.S. history. And he is the man behind the story of this half a billion dollar Social Security scam. His massive con was the largest theft of government money through the Social Security program, which landed him in jail for 12 years with an additional 15 years added after his attempt to flee the country. I mean, at one point he amasses so much money, he goes to Thailand and opens a brothel. There are so many elements to the story. You're like, what? So at one point, there are three investigations into this scam. You will see interviews with Damien, the Wall Street Journal reporter that broke that story open in 2011, and many government officials behind the scenes. And the most important thing is the two whistleblowers, the badasses, the two women that really broke the story open, who have never, up until this point, received any accolades. And they are so deserving of it. So I'm hoping that with this doc series, they get the attention and the respect that they deserve. And so this is an interview with not only the two whistleblowers, Jennifer and Sarah, but also the Emmy-nominated filmmakers, James Lee Hernandez and Brian Lazarte. So I got a chance to talk to all four of them and unpack this crazy story. So if you loved The Invisible Pilot, you're going to love this. They actually wrote McMillions, so you're going to understand the feel of it. You will be laughing and screaming at your device, at your TV, as you watch this. I know you're going to love it. It's called The Big Con, 4 episodes, Apple TV. And then I have my friend Heather Brooker, who so hilariously texts me and goes, we got to talk about Is It Cake on Netflix. So we talk about that and also a Food Network Tournament of Champions show that she also obsesses about. She's so funny and so devoted to the Food Network. So lots in this episode. Can't wait for it. So here we go. 2 years ago for my birthday, my friend Carlene got me the most perfect birthday gift, a Vuori jogger. Since then, it's become a staple in my wardrobe. To know me is to know I love Vuori joggers. And here's why I love it. The product is incredibly versatile. It can be used for just about any activity like running, training, swimming, yoga, but also awesome for lounging or weekend errands. You will love the way you look in all Vuori clothing. And ordering your new favorite items could not be easier. Their website will showcase all the great colors and for all of their soft and well-made clothes. And here's another reason I love it. Vuori is 100% offsetting their carbon footprint. They're also reducing and offsetting 100% of their plastic footprint from 2019 and beyond. And they are utilizing better sustainable materials for their products, empowering your best active life. And for men, know that my husband loves Vuori pants too. They're perfect for running and his go-to travel pant. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. And for my listeners, they are offering, get this, 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/Kate. That's Vuori.com/Kate. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/Kate and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KateCasey for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KateCasey to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KateCasey. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmermann dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. The Big Con is a four-part series from Emmy-nominated filmmakers James Lee Hernandez and Brian Lazarte. The Big Con follows big shot Kentucky lawyer Eric C. Kahn, one of the biggest fraudsters in U.S. history, and the incredible story behind his $500 million Social Security scam. His massive con was the largest theft of government money through the Social Security program, landing him in jail for 12 years with an additional 15 years added after his attempt to flee the country. Joining me today are James and Brian and the two hero whistleblowers, true badasses, who brought this case to life, Jennifer Griffith and Sarah Carver. Welcome, everybody.
Morning.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
This story is bonkers. James and Brian, how did you find it?
It really started with the talent of doing McMillions. A producer that we worked with for a long time and worked with on that, Peter King, came to us and said, I heard about this wild attorney in a small town in Eastern Kentucky. He was traveling around the world. He had Bentleys in this small town. He had like all these wives. But he also stole $500 million from the U.S. government. And that really stopped us dead in our tracks. And, you know, as we continue to look into it, once we immediately start to find out about Sarah and Jennifer and how they really brought this to the forefront and stood up to one of the largest entities in the U.S. government. And we just thought this is something that not only is like crazy and funny and weird, but also at the same time is a very serious message that is underlying within it.
Absolutely. And Jennifer and Sarah, you were both, correct me if I'm wrong, both senior case technicians for the Social Security Administration when you started to notice something was wrong?
Correct.
And Sarah, you'd been voicing concerns about what you perceived as the improper processing of Social Security claims as early as 2006?
Yeah. This is Jennifer. Initially, the way we discovered it was through the case's docketing system. And then I got Sarah involved because she was my union rep, but also she technically worked for Judge Daugherty in this instance and could see as what I was seeing as well.
Early on, when we began our careers with the administration in 2001, it didn't take long for anyone to figure out that there was a pattern when it came to Judge Daugherty's cases, because there were a lot of Eric Kahn cases that came along with that. And generally about probably 30-40% of our caseload was Eric Kahn cases. So it wasn't hard to figure out there's some kind of a pattern.
Mm-hmm. Like there was some sort of symbiotic relationship between the management, Judge Daugherty, and the attorney representative, Eric Kahn. And you said that there'd be up to 20 cases a day at a 15-minute interval, as opposed to a normal ALJ schedule, which would typically consist of approximately 6 to 8 cases per day at one-hour intervals?
His hearings could even be as little as 10 minutes. Wow. It was just a matter of, you know, going on the record, and you know, he was granting and granting it. He would say the name of the claimant, the name of the representative, and then he would just say granted.
And to put that into perspective for people, if someone has a claim, you said that that would take up to 18 months to be heard?
Generally. At one point, we were a little over 2 years, but wow, we got down to 18 months, and then eventually we got down to 12. But generally, 12 to 18 months is about average.
So if that's happening, I've seen programs within the government where you're sort of heralded if you are able to do things quickly. Was that in this case as well?
Yeah. I mean, our office was recognized for bringing down that backlog, and not necessarily recognized for our speed in like processing time, but to some degree, the quantity that we processed got us recognition. We were generally number one in the nation as far as processing cases. Yeah. We're in a very small community in a small town.
Damien, who wrote this Wall Street Journal piece, that comes out in 2011. Were you starting to experience retaliatory acts before that? Or was it not until that Wall Street Journal article came out that it really sort of began?
We started verbally notifying supervisors in 2005, and that didn't do anything. And then we worked our way up to making sure we documented everything via email. We reached outside of the agency to local representatives and to news media. And it started to happen that every time we would report an instance of, you know, cases being misdirected, that we would get retaliated against for reporting that.
So James and Brian, talk to me a little about Damien's reporting. Now, the interesting thing about him as well is he had a childhood disability issue. So it seems as if this tugged at his heartstrings more than any other story he had worked on for a while. How did his article change the timeline, the trajectory of the story?
Damien, yeah, he does have a personal story that a lot of people, when they watch episode one of The Big Con, recognize and see like how this was something that was near and dear to his heart, and how important he felt it was that people were not abusing the system, because he had experienced this himself. Damien, a little side note from the documentary series, a bunch of different articles about looking into federal spending and Social Security disability benefits, because it's, you know, $130 billion a year. And no one had really looked into like how that money was being allocated. And there were actually two other crazy stories that resulted in arrests and another law firm actually shutting down. Wow. And so when he started looking into this case, it really just started with a number, right? He looked, because at that time, it was public information. You could actually see these administrative law judges, which, for people who don't know, they are real judges, but they're not like the kind of real judge that you associate with, like, you know,
Supreme Court, right?
Exactly, right. They only do this. They basically say, "Are you disabled?" They look at all the documentation, which that is the documentation that's provided by the client, and then packaged and prepared for by people like Sarah and Jennifer, right? And they are the ones who decide whether or not this person is going to get benefits potentially for life based on their disability. And so when Damien saw that there was this one judge, Judge Doherty, that was approving 99% of their cases, he was like, that doesn't seem right when the average is like 60. Mm-hmm. And he was also approving almost over twice as many cases per year than any other judge. And then realized, well, most of his clients or most of his cases actually came from this one attorney, Eric C. Kahn. And that triggered this insane story for him, which, you know, led to him talking to Sarah and Jennifer. And then as you see in the actual documentary series, he becomes part of the story, which that usually you don't see that happen too much for reported be like become part of the story that we are now telling here.
And it is pretty funny when he goes to the office and he's telling the story. I mean, first of all, the Eric Kahn's office looks like a polygamous ranch. And it's creepy how he basically had all the women and all women work for him in the office and they weren't allowed to talk to each other, which is cult vibes, 100%. And then he has this guy who's kind of his assistant who almost dresses up like a security guard who is kind of doing his dirty work. And at some point, Damien really starts to worry about his own life when he goes to interview them. Was this something that you saw a pattern of, that people lived in fear after kind of peeling back a layer of the Kahn story?
It's really interesting because, you know, with Eric Kahn, with Eastern Kentucky, really this whole area of coal country, Eastern Kentucky, you know, Southern Ohio, West Virginia, there is a certain level of, it's its own planet and it kind of survives by its own rules. And for years and years, they have not been, usually if somebody, an out-of-towner comes in and does anything, whether it's, you know, people from LA doing something in entertainment or business people, usually they do not paint the locals in the best light. And so there's this general, we look after our own and we have our own form of, not necessarily justice, but like we take care of ourselves. And anything outside of that, you know, we're going to keep that at an arm's length and keep a really close eye on it. And so you personally, the two of us going into that area, we really felt that vibe of,
wow,
man, this is like, we definitely stick out like sore thumbs here. Like everyone knows we're not from here. And it took a long time for us to gain that trust. So you can see in a world where Damien had never done anything like this before. He's usually, like he said, I'm at my desk reporting, looking up spreadsheets. I'm not a war correspondent that goes out
right
and does all this stuff. And so to him, the danger just felt even greater. And then you do have some people that were hyper loyal to Eric that didn't want to mess with the system because Eric was flooding the area with millions of dollars. You're not just helping individuals out, but you're helping the economy of an entire area out. And so all of these things roll into the fact that there were a lot of people that had a lot to lose. And so there were, you know, some questionable choices of what they were going to do to protect themselves.
I mean, it almost feels like a dictatorship, you know, where people know probably he's doing something illegal, but at the same time, there's not a lot of money coming into that community. And there's that fear that if something ends in his business, that cuts off their income. He's such a strange person. Let's just talk about that for a little bit. I mean, he's charismatic in a goofy way, but diabolical at the same time. He had been married 16 times. Are we even sure it's just 16? Do you think that there were other women that we have no idea about?
No.
And the fact that women married him, I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about that and also his relationship with his mother, because that's weird too.
I mean, Eric certainly has that multi-layered, you're not sure how you feel about him type of vibe. I think when people first come into the documentary series, they might have one way they feel about him by the end of episode one, but it might change by the time they get to episode four. And we honestly had a very similar experience. And that is what makes him such a complex character.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we tell the story from Damien's point of view back in 2011, when we're kind of at the height of Sarah and Jennifer really trying to like speak out and say, hey, everybody, like, this is a real problem. We need to pay attention to this. Mm-hmm. And they're worried about their, you know, their safety every single day. That you can understand from Damien's point of view how careful and how dangerous potentially Eric Khan or Judge Doherty or other people associated with him might be. And so there was definitely a fear. And what's not, I mean, there's actually more beyond the doc series. We're doing a companion podcast. We do kind of get into some of these things there, but like, you know, there were some mysterious deaths associated with this story.
I'm not that surprised.
You kind of, you know, there's no conclusive evidence or there's nothing to say like, okay, maybe it's just coincidence, but there was actually a lot more fear that Damien had going into it that then is almost like revealed because we just didn't have the time to get into it in the doc series.
Then you're also worried about Jennifer and Sarah's safety because they keep raising the alarm, but it's not until the 2011 Wall Street Journal article where people start to kind of pay attention. And then there was this weird coincidence where there's an investigation begins May 19th, 2011, where they say they were there seizing computers, but it just seemed like, was that really on the same day?
You know what, the federal government, upon, you know, when all these investigations started, I personally saw the shredding of documents. They ordered 5 paper shredders and they massively started destroying documents. They brought in someone and removed the memory hardware from the backup system. And I mean, we were in the midst of a federal investigation and they literally took no measures whatsoever. They were telling employees, they were sending us emails, retention emails, telling us if you have any information on the system that's older than this date to remove it. And, you know, I was like, well, wait a minute, are we not in the middle of a federal investigation?
And they sat on that investigation for a while before they actually ever took action.
Yeah. I mean, they would respond to me like, well, you need to talk to your attorney. So everybody else, they were making a document saying that you basically removed everything from your computer, but obviously they didn't make me sign it. But they did make everybody else sign it.
I think it's important to note is that like all the retaliation during the federal investigation, all these things that were happening, when that article dropped and there was definitely a feeling that this was going to get better. Okay, this is out there. There's congressional, you know, investigators looking into this, Office of Inspector General, like that this is like, okay, everything's going to stop and that life was actually going to get somewhat back to normal for them. Mm-hmm. And the complete opposite happened, which is what makes this story so crazy, is that it took years before there was actually a Senate hearing, which was then all on the record, like testifying. And even that wasn't enough to stop things from getting worse.
So there were 3 investigations going at one time. There was Damien, the reporter, officer of the inspector general, and the Senate subcommittee. All these investigations were stonewalled?
Well, all 3 of them served different purposes. So Damien, he's a reporter. All he can do is do his report, put that in the Wall Street Journal, and then hope that it creates enough public outrage and calls out these entities so something actually moves. With Senate investigative committees, they do an investigation that is somewhat similar to what an inspector general's office would do. But the thing is, their whole end-all be-all of what their investigation is a Senate hearing. And they just lay out everything, and this allows them to change laws. That's like mm-hmm. the 100% their whole goal. They can't go arrest people. The OIG, they're investigating this to actually put handcuffs on someone and take them to court to eventually get them put in prison. And so that is that was where the rubber wasn't meeting the road, where the Senate laid everything out. Here you go. Boom. Here's your case made for you. The Inspector General's office, they also had done their investigation, laid things out. But for whatever reason, and this is something that we get into in the companion podcast that we're doing that goes along with the Big Con, also comes out on May 6th, is that for whatever reason, these local U.S. attorney's offices weren't taking up the case. No. Because as an investigator, we even learned this with McMillions. If the FBI and Inspector General's offices can investigate, but unless a federal prosecutor is going to stand up and take this to court, you're wasting your time.
And the congressional investigation, the hearings, are almost like a Christopher Guest movie, too. You've got Melinda and Jamie, who are the con employees, talking about Dr. Huffnagel, who did the physical exams. And you're just like, this can't even be real. And at one point, I believe it was Melinda, she refers to one of the doctors as a whore doctor, which was probably the most talked about point of the hearing. And then, of course, the government shut down around then, so the government employees could not speak. At that point, Jennifer and Sarah, are you just so frustrated that nothing is happening, considering this began for you in 2001?
We're angry at this point. We're angry because no accountability. No Social Security Administration official has ever had to answer any questions regarding this. Senate or otherwise, how it happened, why it happened, why they allowed it to happen, what are they going to do in order to prevent it from happening again? Yeah, nothing.
And then you have people that are getting their Social Security payments suspended. And I think that you guys do a great job of highlighting so many people that had real issues that were not getting payments. And what was that like for you as filmmakers to see the pain of those that were overlooked because of this huge scandal within the system?
It was a crucial component to this story.
Yeah.
I mean, on the surface, a lot of people felt that all of Khan's clients had to be in on the fraud.
Right.
And that clearly isn't the case. We do know, at least we've heard from a lot of people that have said, like, yeah, there were clearly people who were taking advantage of the system. But to blanket every single person who went to Khan, who, Khan, you got to remember, like, he had every single billboard in the area. He had every single, he was doing commercial after commercial after commercial. And there were wacky ads, but, like, they got attention. And everyone saw that he actually got results, and he got them faster than anyone else. And I think it's important for us to take people who are watching the series on that journey, to let people like be in the shoes of those folks who don't really have an experience dealing with an attorney who needed benefits and said, hey, I went to Eric, my neighbor went to Eric, and look at how fast he got results. That, of course, why wouldn't you go to Eric? And to have all of everybody all at once just get a letter, or in some cases, people, who we spoke with didn't even get a letter, just like their benefits just stopped. It created a humanitarian crisis that even, Sarah and Jennifer were completely surprised with as well. And we knew that that was going to be an important detail when we revealed that in our documentary series, because it also just illustrates the complexity of this. Like, yeah, there's a lot of wackiness and quirky humor with Eric, the Christopher Guest component, like it's stranger than fiction. But there was also a great tragedy with this story as well. And it's for a lot of people who are still fighting to get their benefits, or in some cases, they're facing what we call these redetermination hearings now. So they're basically being asked to then, show up and explain that they were disabled at the time they initially filed for disability. Mm-hmm. And like all of these people are terrified of losing their benefits. So it is a big deal. It's still happening today. And there are an incredible group of attorneys that are helping represent them. One that's obviously our one main one, Ned Pillersdorf, who's featured in the documentary series as well, has been really at the forefront helping those who do not have representation.
Thank God. Now, let's talk a little bit about how the story starts to unravel, or at least Eric's freedom starts to unravel. It starts to unravel, in, would you say, in 2017?
Yeah, 2016, I think.
2016. Actually. And so it turns out that he had been, the word cahoots is used, which makes me laugh. A word I think my parents use. But he was in cahoots, if you will, with Judge Doherty, and it seems to go back to an incident involving the judge's daughter.
The thing with Eric's, or with Doherty's daughter, is that's really the motivation behind all this. There's this, basically this arrangement that happens between him and a judge. It really, the key portion that people don't realize is like the whole scheme wasn't that complex.
Right.
It was really this sort of good old boys back room, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod thing, as Eric says in in this. But, you know, you have something going on where government officials now are actually like actively working with somebody on the outside. And at that point, there was nothing to stop them except for Sarah and Jennifer. And
right.
The two of them are sire, you know, ringing all alarms. Everything is going off, but nobody's paying attention to it because everyone was benefiting from what was going on. And so this really builds to a head where it's unavoidable at this point. There are now all these investigations going on. You have Senator Colburn, who's set to retire in 2015. And right before his retirement, one of the last things he does is on the Senate floor make this plea of, why won't the Department of Justice step in and prosecute this situation?
Yeah.
And so it gets to that point where the DOJ steps in and you have this large climactic trial, basically. And then Eric eventually does get busted. And in true Hollywood fashion, if we would have written it this way, people would have thought we were going a little too far with it.
Right.
But Eric goes on the run. And that whole thing was just mind-blowing. Our entire team here at Fundmeter, when we like first learned about that, we couldn't believe it, and yet of course it's so Eric.
And the story, when you see it, you're just in disbelief in every single part of it. Eventually he's caught outside of a Pizza Hut in Honduras. He was sentenced to an additional 15 years for escape. So here we are, somebody who really was at the helm of this underlying scheme to defraud the Social Security Administration of more than $550 million. And the most frustrating part of the story is that Jennifer and Sarah have never received recognition for what they have done, which makes my ears bleed. I am so frustrated by it. And it is my hope that with this story that you get the recognition you so deserve. I've been awestruck by your bravery, with your courage, your tenacity. Tell us what it has meant for you to be at the center of the story and the impact it has had on your lives.
Considering everything that we've lost, it's nice that this is going to be in the public eye. And what we hope is that there will be greater protections for whistleblowers and policy change that happens.
The policy change is important to us because if not, it's going to happen again. I mean, there are regulations that have been in place since Social Security ever began and have not been changed yet.
It's just not a well-oversighted system. And even though this was a perfect storm, it could easily happen again. And we don't want anybody to have to go through what we went through.
And how have your feelings about Eric shifted, or maybe not at all, over time? Because it seems like he may be the only person that has reached out and said that you were mistreated.
Right.
Yeah.
We really didn't know Eric to begin with, and we'd only met him one time during the course of everything that we've went through. And having met him,
Initially we were scared of him.
Yeah, we were, because it was just the unknown. But we also knew that he could have not gotten away with and done. And, I mean, this could not have occurred over the years and years and years without that perfect storm, without the people within the agency having allowed it and having let it happen
and helped cover it up.
And to this day have not been held, you know, accountable. And that
we don't feel that way about him now.
Yeah. And we don't feel that way about him now. He's only one part of he's a crazy character. He's a crazy part of it.
And what he did was wrong.
And you know, we know that. But he didn't do this by himself. That's our main point. He couldn't have.
So at the end of this project, you guys have all spent a lot of time together. Do you feel connected, all four of you, for the rest of your life for telling this story?
It's funny, Damien, we had a conversation with Damien recently, and he was like, he said something almost like, welcome to the club. Like, you're basically, you are now a part of the story yourselves.
Yeah.
And so you will be forever tied to the saga that is Eric Khan and Sarah and Jennifer. And certainly there's a great deal of truth to this because maybe it hasn't really settled in quite yet. But I mean, this really began in 2005. I mean, that's a long time ago. I'm talking 17 mm-hmm. years at this point. And Damien as well, 2011. I mean, and he's been over 11 years at this point, like where it's just been a constant. There's always been some new thing that pops up. And ultimately, you know, people have talked about the story at different intervals, right? When Damien first broke it and little news stories that popped out here and there. And when Eric went on the run, but like no one has ever really taken the time to do this deep dive into the story. And I think that there's, you know, there's a lot of great personal connections and things that we learn throughout this. And we have such great respect and hope for Sarah and Jennifer to be recognized, as you put it earlier. But I think we talk about this a lot that like, it's, you know, it's a, there's kind of it's a warning shot, right? To mm-hmm. what happens when you ignore a problem. Because and this is revealed in the documentary series too, not giving anything away, but that like all it would have taken is one person early on when Sarah and Jennifer first mentioned something to stop all this from happening. And they didn't, you know, they ignored it. They ignored it so many times. And then they started to actually try to stop Sarah and Jennifer from actually making their presence known. And what happens when you ignore a problem for as long as you do? It just becomes a bigger problem. And in this case, you can see just the tidal wave of issues that resulted from this, that it never had to happen. And so hopefully there's a great takeaway here. And hopefully this is kind of the tail end of that, or like
right.
There can be some rebuilding. There can actually be some policy change. There can be some further recognition, and everyone can feel like there's a bit more closure to the story that has been, sitting on many, many of shoulders for a number of years.
So tell everybody where they can watch The Big Con.
You can see The Big Con on Apple TV Plus on May 6th, and you can find that wherever Apple TV Plus is available. The Big Con, the official podcast, also the first episode comes out on May 6th, and then one episode will come out every week for the next 5 weeks after that first one. And we're so, so thankful to Molly and the rest of the team at Apple TV Plus, because when we first came to them with this story, there were a lot of places that we talked to, and the fun and games aspect of Eric was all anybody would focus on.
Right.
And they were really open to the fact that we wanted to make sure that everybody understood how serious this was, and that we're not going to pull punches just to make it light and fluffy. Like, it's still as funny as it can be. It is very tragic in an instant. And so they were really great at letting us go down the rabbit hole in that sense.
Well, tell everybody where they can find you.
You can find us. Our website is funmetermedia.com. Usually the most up-to-date info is on Instagram at funmeterofficial. Or you can just find me or Brian on Instagram randomly and see what I've been eating on vacation whenever I can.
And Jennifer and Sarah, where can they find you?
We actually have a Facebook page that we just created, a disability consulting firm to help people navigate through the Social Security disability system. And that is AL Disability Services. And then we both have Instagram and Facebook pages. Yeah.
You guys are real badasses. I am saluting you. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Heather Brooker is my friend, an award-winning journalist, one of my most hilarious friends, and she is a go-to expert on many things. One of those is anything to do with food shows. She watches not just food shows, but you also watch like quirky shows. Like it'll be like the greatest pottery maker of all time, or blowing glass, or these weird things. Like I'll be like, what? I think it's because you're a supremely creative person. But I'm going to ask you about two different shows. One is called Is It Cake on Netflix. This one has Mikey Day hosting a baking contest during which skilled cake artists create mouthwatering replicas of handbags, sewing machines, and other objects. And the other is Food Network Tournament of Champions, where host Guy Fieri gathers 16 of the world's greatest chefs for a single elimination, sudden death culinary contest in which competitors face off in head-to-head battles to stay alive. Heather Brooker, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Mama. It's so good to be here. I'm so excited to talk about these shows. Listen, I have to ask, did you want me to do the food shows because I'm your only fat friend?
First of all, that's ridiculous. No. However, you were the person that texted me and said, are you watching Is It Cake yet? Because this host is horrible. And then I watched it and I agreed with you.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Mikey Day is so funny on
SNL.
He's very talented. We both know him from his work at the Groundlings in LA. Like he's, you know, but I just feel like he's sort of miscast in this series. And I'm not sure even how that came to be. Like who was like, oh, we need to get Mikey Day in here. Out of all the comedians and, you know, people they could have chosen for this, he just seems really miscast.
What doesn't work, I think, for Mikey is that he's so clever. He has such a great sense of humor. I mean, if you think about all those Funny or Die videos where he played in those skits about David Blaine, like the David Blaine spoof. I think Mikey Day is best suited for a show like The Mole. This one, I think, requires somebody who has much more of like a super peppy, positive personality, because the idea of making cakes in the shape of seashells and boxes and
it's so ridiculous.
And a pile of towels really requires somebody who's just like whimsical. Silly. I think you need like a whimsical, silly kind of Mary Poppins-ish host. Yeah.
Like a Heather Brooker, hashtag I'm not bitter. but they do. They need someone silly that can be like, oh my God, look at this cake that you just made and that's a seashell. Like, but what? Like, because truly, I will say on this show, it is impressive what these bakers can do and what they can create. Like these, you know, for example, there was a bunch of purses that they had, and they put up like six different purses, and the guest panel of judges have to guess which one is the cake and which one is the real purse. And they look so realistic and so lifelike. It's really quite impressive what they can do. Very impressive. Can we talk about the panel of judges for just a second? I want to know how, Kate, how can we be panelists on Is It Cake?
This show obviously is from a TikTok trend. I think that too often these networks are looking at TikTok now for show concepts.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is enough for a full series, to command a whole series. Maybe this is like a one-off, but could you watch Is It Cake season 9?
Well, listen, I will say that my daughter and I, who is 9, binge watched the whole series and she was fascinated. She was excited to guess at the end if it, you know, if they were going to get it or not, or which one was cake. Because they don't show you what the baker has created until the end. So they leave it kind of up to the audience to guess as well. And I don't know. I mean, it may get another season or two, right? It honestly just felt like filler. Like it felt like filler where they were like, what's an easy to produce show that involves food that people will just binge watch. And that's exactly what we did. We watched it all. And then my daughter was so excited. She's like, let's make a cake. And I will say, we went and I happen to have some old cake mix. And I was like, sure, let's make a cake. So we just made a cake. Do I think it's going to win Emmys? Do I think it's going to go for 10 seasons? I don't think so. I mean, maybe one or two. But they need to get a more dynamic host. They need to have us on as judges.
Correct. Except I would be a terrible judge because I'm like, is this gluten-free? Is it creamy? I can't do that. The other show is called Food Network Tournament of Champions. As mentioned, Guy Fieri is the host and they're 16 of the greatest chefs. How much do you love this show?
You know what? I think it's super entertaining. I know that Guy Fieri is divisive. Some people either like him or they don't. I personally like him. I think he is very watchable. There's a reason he has like hundreds of shows, you know, under his belt. This is a show he also created and executive produced. So that's why he's hosting it. And I think it's super fun. Like, I love that there is so many different elements. It's like Iron Chef, but without the like drama and like
fanfare.
Fancy. Yeah. And all the this is a little more like, what do I have in the kitchen? There's this randomizer that they all have to spin, you know, the wheel. And it's kind of funny because like sometimes they have to cook with a waffle iron or sometimes they have to cook, you know, peas on like a griddle or something. Like it's a lot of fun. There's some different elements involved. And I think it's really entertaining to watch these like top tier chefs scramble and try to figure out how they're going to cook, you know, octopus on a waffle iron or whatever.
Who is the one chef where he or she are consistently blowing your hair back? Like, oh my God, they're so talented. I can't believe they just came up with that.
I always love Michael Voltaggio, but I've always been a fan of his since he was on Top Chef. And a lot of the competitors are former Top Chef winners. A lot of these chefs became famous and really built their career off of Top Chef, another food competition show that, you know, is the OG.
Yeah.
And my husband and I used to watch that relentlessly. Every week we would just watch and to see what Padma was going to eat and if she was really going to eat or if she was just going to take a little nibble of something. and, you know, Tom Colicchio and all that stuff. So I feel like if this is just sort of like a who's who and there's a wider net of chefs. And I think it's cool to listen to see which chefs have restaurants in LA. So we can be like, oh, maybe we should go and check that out. Or this chef is so well known. But yeah, I love Michael Voltaggio's food. It always looks incredible. And Richard Blaze as well. And Antonia.
Do you remember my old studio for Wondery on Sunset Boulevard?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Richard Blaze came down there so I could interview him.
Oh,
and
cool.
I thought it would be so funny if I had him try one of my family recipes. Oh, God. So
was it bad? What happened?
I'm like cringing now. So my mom, who was a pastry chef, made peach kuchen for us as kids. So I'm the dumbass. I made it the night before. And my husband was like, why are you bringing that? This is so embarrassing. Don't represent our family that way. This is such a nightmare. And so it was just over a day. It just didn't. It didn't sit well. So anyway, he was so sweet and he ate it. And he was like, it's interesting. I don't remember what he exactly said, but I was like, why did I do this? This is so horrible. Yeah. So anyway.
It's like world-class chef. And you're like,
yes, because at the time on Top Chef, remember, it was like all about like gastronomy.
Yeah.
Gastronomy. And I was just like, I cannot believe I brought my rinky-dink peach kuchen recipe to this guy. But he was so nice. And then he invited me to his restaurant. And so for that, I salute him.
Yeah. And you listen, you can tell, I feel like, and I know you've watched enough television to know, you can kind of pick up a vibe from someone to know if they're like just a nice person.
Yes.
And I think chefs and chefs can get kind of a bad rap because I don't know if they're just divas. Like in the chef world, it's fascinating to me that anybody is a diva. But I feel like he comes across as just like a genuinely nice person.
Yeah.
And then there's Michael Voltaggio, who kind of comes across as like a jerk, but I feel like he's probably pretty nice in
nice
real life.
In real life, yeah.
Maybe that's his persona.
Yeah.
But it's incredible to me to watch these world-class chefs in 30 minutes create a dish that has so many different elements and flavors or whatever. I literally cannot even heat up dinner in a frozen microwave box. And I'm like, oh crap. You know? So like, it's amazing to me. I have so much respect for chefs, can do that and do that under pressure. They have $100,000 on the line this year. The first couple of seasons they did this show, the prize was a truck, which I thought was kind of weird. Yeah, it was kind of weird.
What?
I don't know. I want to say a Ford, maybe.
Of course,
I don't know if
it
Ford was sponsoring. If Ford was sponsoring the show, maybe that's why they were doing that.
Like, I'd be like, I'm not doing the show. I don't want a truck. It's too big for my driveway.
Yeah. Well, that's what the Guy Fieri said. I'm a nerd, and I was like reading about like why are they offering a truck? Well, apparently it was something they were doing the first couple of seasons, and a lot of the chefs were like selling the truck anyway because they don't need it. They don't need a big truck. They wanted the money. So they switched it now and it's a $100,000 prize, which is way better and a lot more high stakes for sure. But that's a lot of money.
God. Can you imagine that? If you win this competition, you win a camper. Be like, who wants a camper? Like what?
What's a camper? Some millennials.
Baby, Gulfstream. Listen, I love you dearly. Where can people find you?
Oh my gosh. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook at The Heather Brooker and on TikTok at Heather Brooker. And I also have a podcast, which has been on hiatus for a while now, but I'm trying to decide. I've been picking Kate's brain about how to bring it back and what I want to do.
Bring it back.
But it's motherhoodinhollywood.com. And it is all about me sharing my life and interviewing other people who are in the entertainment industry about how they balance their family life with their love of movies and television.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
The amazing Kate Casey. I want to thank my great guests, James, Brian, Jennifer, and Sarah, and remind you, and Heather. And remind you to click subscribe, leave a 5-star review, join the Facebook group Reality Life with Kate Casey. Do it now. You don't want to miss out. You can get my must-watch list by going to katecasey.substack.com. You can find me on Instagram at @katecaseyca, TikTok, it's Kate Casey, Twitter, @katecasey. I tweet about shows and during shows all week long. And you can check me on Cameo at Kate Casey. And finally, bonus episodes by going to Patreon, patreon.com/KateCasey. Hope that you have a great week, and I cannot wait to circle back with you on Friday.
once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.